Hello Bulls fans, and welcome to another episode of Bulls HQ. Thank you for joining me again this week as we wrap up the last week of preseason action. Joining me today to talk Bulls is Edward Schuller Jr., his first time appearance on the podcast. He's the host of the Bulls Gold podcast, a new Chicago Bulls podcast, which I'm sure if you're not checking it out, you guys definitely need to be doing so. So if you haven't done so already, definitely check out Bulls Gold. So Edward is here to talk Bulls with us today. Edward, thanks for jumping on here with me, man. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. You've been on two episodes of Bulls Gold already, so definitely need to return the favor. And big fan of your podcast, and I'm just ready to talk some Bulls. Preseason is over, and we're getting closer and closer to the regular season, so I'm really excited.
Yeah, it's getting exciting now, man, and particularly with LaVine looking quite as good as he has looked. So I want to talk a lot about Zach LaVine a little bit later on, because I think there's a little bit of a perception out there, for me at least, that I'm a bit of a Zach LaVine hater of sorts. And whilst that's not necessarily true, I think it's timely to acknowledge how good he's been in preseason. Obviously, there's still some holes there, but I want to talk LaVine because he's the player that I'm probably most excited about right now outside of Wendell Carter Jr. So we're definitely going to talk about those two guys. But firstly, how does it feel to be on the other side of the mic here? You host Bulls Goal with Salim Sudawala over there. You're typically leading the show, but how does it feel to be on the other end there, just casually receiving the questions this time around?
It's different. Usually I'm just kind of in my mind, I'm trying to steer everything and, while also trying to deliver my opinion as well. But it's a little weird. tomorrow we'll be recording our episode. So I have to get back into that mindset. But this is a welcome change for now. I can get used to it for this episode.
Well, perfect. You relax into that guest spot and let me steer this thing wherever it needs to go. I'm not sure how straight it'll be, but let's see where it goes. But I want to start off with the lineup change. Obviously, we're going to talk the last couple games here, the game against the Pacers, the game against the Nuggets, as well as maybe that interesting game against the Charlotte Hornets as well. So we'll touch on all three games because I think there's relevant points to discuss. But I guess the larger theme of all of those games is what Hoiberg has done with the starting rotation. So obviously, most fans would be aware if they've caught the last couple games that the Bulls inserted Wendell Carter Jr. and Bobby Portis into that starting unit, so both moving into that power forward and center position, which meant that the Bulls elected to put Jabari Parker and Robin Lopez to the bench as the reserve bigs, essentially. So I want to talk about that because it's obviously had some ramifications in terms of how the last two games of the preseason sort of played out. It looked a little bit different to what we saw previously, but it also has permutations as to what the roster may be, or sorry, the rotation may be heading into the regular season now that we've sort of closed up and finished up the preseason. So just wanted to get your initial thoughts on what you've made of the lineup change itself, and do you think Hoiberg is completely justified in doing so?
Absolutely, because this is the last year where Hoiberg really has job security, if you think about it. He has 1 year remaining on his contract right now. After this season, he doesn't have anything, so he'll be a lame duck next season. So I think Hoiberg really, really wants to win games this year, and I think he is firmly of the mindset that there are expectations that he needs to deliver to. So, you see that Jabari Parker is not working as a small forward. He hasn't really worked as a small forward like the last two or three seasons, and even as a power forward, he struggles defensively. So, just to get Justin Holiday into the lineup, just to get Bobby Portis, who's bringing some much-needed energy. Didn't you think it brought a refreshing change? The team seemed to play with more bounce, don't you think?
Yeah, definitely. And I attribute a lot of that to Bobby Portis. And I made this note today, and it's probably it's not a groundbreaking note, but it's become pretty clear to me that Bobby Portis is maybe the vocal/emotional leader of this team. He may not be the only leader on this squad, but it's clear to me that he's the one sort of in the huddle really dictating the emotion of this team, how vocal he is out there on the floor. So to have a player with Bobby Portis being that vocally energetic, but just thinking about his game generally, he is that type of player anyway, where he gets out there and he's a little bit crazy, but he gives it his all, no matter if it's good or bad. And I think that's sort of been infectious. And then when you pair him with a guy like Wendell Carter Jr., who though he's a rookie, he's in all the right spots. He's doing all the right things. He's not necessarily showing that he's going to be out here dropping 20 and 10 in his rookie season. But all the little things that he's doing as a rookie, as a 19-year-old, it's kind of insane. So it's not surprising to see that the Bulls have looked a little better in these last two games against the Pacers and the Nuggets, given that those two have sort of shared the floor.
Yeah, they look younger, more athletic. I like Lopez, but I mean, it's clear that he can't match up with teams like, we go back to the Charlotte game. Charlotte seemed just faster. They were zipping the ball around. And we go back to the Bucks game. The Bucks were doing the same thing. So teams just look faster playing us. And once we got Wendell on the floor, once we got Portis into the lineup, now Portis isn't like fast or anything, but the team just seemed to play like the way that I think Hoiberg envisioned this team. They look faster on both sides of the ball. They're moving the ball better. And they're getting up and down better. And there seems to be a more defined set of roles here, especially with Justin Holiday now. I thought people were a little too fast to, you know, rule out Justin Holiday after we drafted Chandler Hutchinson. But it just doesn't seem like Hutchinson is ready, really. Like, if Denzel Valentine is ready for the regular season, you know, Hutchinson could probably be not really in the rotation. And Justin Holiday, while not really a player that's going to give you, you know, crazy production, he gives you like a stabilizer role in that he's a good team defender. He'll hit threes and he won't really dominate the ball and kill the shot clock trying to get a shot off. So, you know, I really like this lineup so far. It's worked. You know, yes, the Bulls still gave up a lot of points today, but you could see that the lineup actually looked functional, whereas the other starting lineup did not.
Yeah, definitely. And look, I want to talk Justin Holiday. Maybe not necessarily Justin Holiday himself, but if we're thinking about the lineup change and what did occur, it was interesting that the Bulls didn't slide Jabari Parker to small forward, because that is something they certainly could have done, but obviously they didn't do. They elected to keep Holiday in at small forward. So not only did they not put Jabari to small forward, even though they inserted Portis and Wendell Carter Jr., so that's certainly something they could have done, and maybe four games ago, maybe if that was the case, they would have done, given that we were led to believe that the Jabari Parker at small forward experiment was going to be something that we'd be seeing all season long. But not only did they not start Jabari Parker, they moved him to the bench and they moved him to power forward. So what do you think this sort of means going forward now? That it obviously works for the moment, given that Lauri Markkanen is out of the rotation currently, but that sort of puts Bobby Portis into that starting four position and Jabari Parker as the backup power forward. But where it's going to get really complicated is when Lauri Markkanen is going to come back. So what does that really mean for Jabari when Lauri is back, given that we're going to assume Portis goes back to his accustomed backup power forward position? Do the Bulls sort of go away from what we've seen in the last couple of games here, where we've seen Jabari at the four, and do they move him back to small forward? Do they do that as a starter? Does Justin Holiday remain? It's kind of an interesting situation, one that's going to be kind of fluid over the next 2 months, I think.
You know, there's really, you know, no easy answer for it right now, because it's just such a wild card. And what's been interesting to me is just like the cycle that we've gone through already with Jabari Parker, where he was presumed to be a starter. Now he's, you know, coming off the bench, and he didn't seem too, you know, excited to accept this role this week. Skipped out on answering questions from reporters after the game on Wednesday against Indiana. And it's just been really interesting how fast we've gotten to this point, and we really haven't even played a game of the regular season. So when Lauri Markkanen comes back, assuming Bobby Portis continues to play well as he had last season and as he has in the preseason, I don't know. There could be really a scenario where Jabari Parker's really playing not that much, where he's just kind of a reserve, like where he's just really a $20 million reserve. And I don't know, like that's, isn't that kind of crazy to think about, that we're kind of at this point already where this is actually a, you know, plausible scenario that could happen?
Yeah, well, I didn't expect it to be this soon. Like, I always had my reservations about Jabari being a small forward. I've made that pretty vocally clear. And I'm not alone in that, obviously. I think a lot of people share those views. But yeah, I didn't expect this I didn't expect us to be in this situation so soon. Now, I guess maybe Jabari looking as bad as he has in preseason has maybe brought that forward. But having said that, he did have his best game of the preseason in that Denver game, scoring 19 points and importantly, an efficient 19 points. Whereas against Charlotte and Indiana, the guy couldn't buy a bucket and barely registered double figures in scoring. And as he sort of has mentioned, that's what he's here to do. That's what scorers or offensive players get paid in the NBA. And whilst he's gotten paid, he hasn't necessarily brought it offensively. But it has been kind of crazy when you sort of step back from it all and think that after five preseason games, we're here discussing Jabari Parker being maybe the most expensive bench player in the NBA. It's kind of nuts. So I don't know what that means going forward, but do you think once Lowry is back, do you think Jabari may slide back to small four? Do you think that experiment sort of is relived again, whether as a starter or not? Because to me, it's become even more clear than what I initially thought, but the shape Jabari is in right now and what we've seen from him athletically and just his game in general, he's clearly better suited to power forward. But do you think once Lowry is back, the small forward experiment will sort of kick off again?
It may have to by default, because you have Portis and Markkanen likely to take the majority of the minutes there, and you really don't want Bobby Portis at center. So, I mean, you really might have to. And as we said, he's just not – defensively, he's not there. And I can't remember who the ball handler was on this play that I'm referencing right now in today's game, but Jabari's closeouts – are just too slow for, and it seems like it's that way for either position. I want to say it was Trey Lyles. I want to say Trey Lyles got the ball off a pass, and it wasn't really even like a crazy pump fake. It was just a kind of a basic pump fake, and Jabari was just on skates, and you get by him easily. And then there was another play where I think I want to say maybe Will Barton or someone got to the lane pretty easily and threw up an alley-oop to I forget who, but he's allowing penetration too easily, and it happens at either position. And I want to say that when you're doing it at small forward, it's going to be even tougher to really, you know, have a good defense. Because to me, I think Zach LaVine and Jabari, we went into the season thinking, okay, these two guys are going to kill us defensively. But so far, Zach LaVine looks okay defense. Like, he's not great, but he looks okay. And we're getting really good offense from him. So it's like, okay, this is fine. But Jabari is just not, I don't know, we're getting bad defense. And on offense, like, we know he's struggling, but what do you think his problem is? Like, do you think that he's just kind of pressing it too much, or do you think it's just the way that, you know, we're using him at small forward or power forward? Like, what do you think the reason is so far for his struggles?
Yeah, it's a tough one, because I mean, a lot of the shots that we've seen from Jabari have always been step back mid-range twos. So he had a good shot profile today, or compared to what we've seen. He had a lot of corner threes or deep corner shots, which were good shots, and I think he made a couple of them too. But I think when he's on ball is when I'm concerned. I think he can be a nice spot-up type player, but I'm not sure if he's willing to accept that. But when he's had the ball, maybe even in the low post or even the high post or even out to the three-point line, he's been doing this move where he sort of drives in a little bit, tries to get his defender on the back foot, but then instead of sort of continue his drive towards the basket, he'll sort of pull up, step back a bit, and he'll sort of settle for that contested mid-range too. Now, I don't know if that's just a function of the way Jabari wants to play, or whether it's something with his confidence or something of that nature, or maybe his body's not completely right and he knows he can't necessarily get to the rim and contest or take up a shot against those bigger defenders because he's not necessarily physically just there right now. I don't know what it is. It might be a combination of all those things, but I've seen Jabari settling for a lot of ugly jump shots, ones that I don't want to see, and I think he's looked best in transition. And we've spoken about, I know you've spoken it on your show, I've definitely spoken about it on here, but Jabari in transition is a weapon, and I think we've seen that a couple times here, that he's too big and he's still fast, that if he can get some open space and get into transition, he can be a good player in that sense, whether he's the guy finishing the play or maybe even making the play, because he's shown that he can be a good passer. But I think once the offense has sort of settled into that half court space, he's really struggled to get off the bounce. He's really sort of let himself settle into those mid-range twos, and they're just shots that aren't good and efficient shots. So it's not really surprising that he's been inefficient, but that said, he's been extremely inefficient to the point where I didn't expect this, even if he was playing at power forward or small forward. He's just been at a level that I didn't necessarily expect. So it's kind of nuts. But to your point about his defense, and you mentioned Trey Lyles, but there was another play that I thought of with Trey Lyles as well. And it's important to note that this is Jabari guarding a power forward here. There was a play there where Jabari sort of over-closed out, or his closed out was too strong on Trey Lyles, and Lyles just bounced past him and got into the lane pretty easily. And Trey Lyles, whilst he's a nimble power forward, we're not talking about Giannis here. He's not a supreme athlete, but he got past Jabari Parker way too easily, and this is Parker playing at his natural position at power forward. And the commentary on the broadcast was, well, the help needs to come over quicker. Well, and whilst that's true, you can't be letting a guy like Trey Lyles take you off the bounce as he gets to the rim. So, look, I'm trying to not be come across as too much of a Parker hater at the moment, because I have been, I guess, negative on him at the moment. But it's kind of hard not to be, because to your point, I didn't expect to be at this point so soon.
Yeah, it's weird, because like we were talking like weeks ago on Media Day how Jabari just seems to be blending in. Like, hey, you wouldn't even notice that Jabari, you know, this is his first year as a Bull, but now everything is just like fast forward, where it's just like, okay, he's had bad games, he got benched, he's not going to accept the role, he's still struggling. It's just a lot in what, this has been like 2 weeks of preseason. Like, I don't know, like, we had doubts going into the season that Jabari fit with this team, and really the excitement was just built on a paper lineup that, you know, has all this youth and athleticism of players who were like 24 years of age or younger. So, I mean, that was the excitement, but the problem was still always trying to figure out how this would work, because there's only one ball on the court. And, you know, as you say, Jabari's not a bad off-ball player. Like, he, that corner three, I feel like he's taking that a lot, and he seems comfortable taking it, and he looks good in that corner three. I want to see more of it, but in a way, it kind of seems like Jabari Parker is the new Zach LaVine, in the sense that we're kind of talking about Jabari trying to do things that, you know, we wanted to see from Zach last season. When we talked about Zach, we was just like, okay, Zach LaVine, he's pressing too much, he's taking a lot of long twos, he's, you know, stopping the offense too much, he's getting beat on defense, we need to see more off the ball, we want to see a more mature shot selection. Like, it kind of seems like he's kind of taken that same spot, and it's even weirder because now Zach LaVine seems to be answering, you know, our prayers, and he's doing what we wanted him to do last season. So I don't know. Like, I think Jabari will bounce back, because the numbers are just too bad to not play better. But I mean, preseason, while it's not a huge, you know, indicator of how everything's going to go, it's kind of hard not to be, you know, significantly concerned here.
Definitely. And I think you've put it pretty eloquently there, that there are some issues that are going to be sort of presenting themselves going forward, but nonetheless, it's going to be entertaining to sort of cover those sorts of things. But it's going to ramp up once Markkanen's back even as well. So it's going to be an interesting time here. But stepping away from what we've seen on the floor, how do you think, or what are your thoughts about Jabari and the way he sort of handled this situation? You touched on it before that he ducked reporters after the Pacers game. That was the first game that he had gone to the bench. He didn't necessarily speak to reporters straight after the game, but I think it was the next day at practice, or maybe it was the day after. I think he had he was asked, basically, would he accept the role coming off the bench, and given that if it was the best for him and the team? And I believe his comment was basically no comment. So what have you made about the way he sort of handled this this demotion? Obviously, it's never easy for a player who was once the number two pick to come into a team, get paid $20 million, to be the highest paid player on the team, and then in the fourth game of preseason has to accept that he's coming off the bench. So I understand there's going to be an ego hit here for pretty much most of the league. But what have you made about Jabari and I guess his comments and the way he sort of handled the situation initially? But do you think that may be a problem in itself going forward, and what that may do to the locker room if this sort of prolongs itself?
I think you hit the nail on the head here. Like, it's in any sport, really, if you get paid $20 million and you get benched like in preseason, like that's a huge ego hit. So I understand why Jabari is not, you know, upbeat about it. You know, I think most people in his situation would not be. But at the same time, you know, you got to be as professional as possible and you got to find ways to help this team win. And what I thought was really interesting was that Jabari Parker claims that Fred Hoiberg didn't tell him about the change. And Fred Hoiberg claims that he did tell Jabari Parker about the change. And if we remember, this is similar to when Joakim Noah was removed from the starting lineup when Fred Hoiberg arrived to Chicago. Fred Hoiberg said that he told Joakim Noah about the change, and Joakim Noah said that Fred Hoiberg didn't. So it's a little deja vu here that this is happening. And I do think that Jabari really, really needs to, you know, straighten it up a little bit. Like, again, I understand why he's acting like that, and I get that he's pretty blunt about things. We're kind of seeing like a trend of that. Like, he's pretty straight to the point. His comments about defense, you know, things like that. But, you know, this is a really young team that nobody really wants the drama. Like, we've had our fill of that in the past. We've had it with Jimmy Butler when Dwayne Wade and Rajon Rondo were here. Like, this team really needs to keep the off-court stuff, or not really off-court, but they need to keep, you know, the turmoil stuff, you know, as low as possible. And I think Jabari being somebody who is, you know, what, he's a fifth-year player. I mean, he's been in the league longer than most of the players on the Bulls, especially the young players. I think he really kind of needs to lead by example here. I think, you know, whatever he does, I think players will definitely look at it and consider it significantly. So, you know, I do want to see him handle himself better here. Like, I want to see him embrace his role. Like, I want to see him kind of embrace it like Bobby Portis was, where you just kind of take it in stride and try and, you know, do the best you can with it.
Yeah, definitely. And look, I don't think Portis being the sixth man has necessarily prevented him from earning a big contract. We'll talk Bobby Portis a little later on, but to your point, he's accepted that role and he's made it his own and has been super effective at it, to the point where he's still going to get a massive payday. He still gets his shots. He still gets his offense, etc. So I don't think it's only a hindrance if you make it one. So that's kind of up to Jabari to sort of see what he does. But we've talked about his inefficiencies and those sorts of things. His scoring hasn't been great. But the one thing he has done, he's rebounded pretty well. And I think his playmaking has been pretty good as well. So averaging just a shade under 3 assists. So there is scope here for Jabari to get it back together again. But again, it's going to come down to him and how much he really wants to do it. But I guess moving away from Jabari and I guess going now to Zach LaVine, because it's an interesting comparison for me, because in a lot of ways, these two guys had a lot of similarities coming into this season. They were both ridiculed often for their defense. They were guys that were coming off significant knee injuries. Obviously, two ACLs for Jabari and only the one for Zach LaVine. But they were two players in the same stages of their career, basically came into the league at the same time, earning new deals at the same time. Offensive players, not much defense, but it would appear that their careers at the moment are sort of are going in completely different ways. So we've talked about Jabari Parker really struggling now. Obviously, we've got to afford him more time. He's coming to a new system, a new team, a new city, etc., whereas Zach LaVine has been here for the 12 months prior. But having said that, Zach LaVine has pretty much been the anti-Jabari Parker, in the sense that a lot of the issues that we had with Zach LaVine coming into this season, maybe they haven't been fully answered at this point, given it's only been 5 preseason games, but Zach LaVine has been that good. He's been so impressive to me, at least, as someone who, I guess, had some reservations about the new deal that he signed. He hasn't fully answered a lot of the questions, but he's gone a long way to show that he's brought a different mindset into how he's playing basketball, and that if he can continue to play this way into the regular season, then we've got a different kind of player on our hands here.
Absolutely, and I've been following you on Twitter, and I've liked seeing your 180 on Zach LaVine. Like, you've become, you're kind of like the number one Zach LaVine fan now. Like, I'm I'm digging Zach LaVine. I was like, man, you know, Marcus really, he's really into Zach
LaVine. I haven't gone full 180. I'd say maybe, you know, maybe a 115 or something like that. I wasn't completely out on him last season. Obviously, it was tough last season coming back from a from that ACL injury into a situation where the Bulls were actively trying to lose games when he was back and those sorts of things. But I did have my concerns about the contract, the length, the dollars, etc., and whether he could live up to it. But the talent was always there. It was just whether he wanted to apply himself and play that way. But from what I've seen thus far, it looks like we've got a different Zach LaVine here. Just the way he's sort of attacking the basket, as an example, he's trying to get the rim way, way more than what he's ever done before. So that in itself is a huge improvement to what we've seen previously.
No doubt. And you mentioned it, Zach LaVine, when he's attacking the basket so far in preseason, he looks really, really good. He, like, the way he's finishing, like, he's finishing around defenders, he's looking for contact, like, and he's getting, like, really good elevation. Like, he looks explosive. He looks, he's still freakishly athletic. Like, this is what we wanted. We wanted him to get into those pick and roll actions, not be afraid to get to the basket, and not settle for those jump shots. He's getting to the rim. He's looking for contact. And if he's not getting contact, he's just going to slam it, or he's going to finish somehow. And I really liked what I've seen. I had some skepticism too about the Zach LaVine contract, $79 million over 4 years. Again, a lot of money for a player who really hasn't had a strong impact on winning in the past, even though he's really, really talented. But this Zach LaVine that we've seen, he looks scary good. He looks really, really good. This is the Zach LaVine where you could look at him and say, okay, this guy could be an all-star one day. Because offensively, you're getting the whole package. He can create off the dribble. He looks like a good passer right now. He's moving the ball well. He's not killing the shot clock. You know, you'll get some bad shots every now and then, but you can live with that as long as you're getting mostly mature shot selection. And attacking the rim is just the core part of it. And then defensively, you know, he looks okay. He looks a lot better than last year, so okay is something you'll deal with when you're getting offense to this level. So, I mean, I'm excited for Zach LaVine. Like, this is what we wanted. We wanted him to step in, mature his game, and take the next step. And, you know, maybe this is really what he can do for this season.
Yeah, definitely. And I'm certainly hopeful of that fact. And to your point, and Zach LaVine in this Denver Nuggets game, he had a play today where I caught myself noting about it, thinking that was a bad shot. And it was that play where he had that and one, I think it was in the first quarter, where he took that fadeaway jump shot in the corner there. He got fouled. He made the jumper and he got to the line and hit the free throw as well. So it was a 3-point play, if I'm not mistaken. And in itself, whilst that's a cool play, he obviously made the fallaway jumper whilst getting fouled and got to the line. He did stop the ball because prior to the ball getting there, it was whipping around nicely until it got to Zach LaVine in the corner. He had an open Chris Dunn on the perimeter there on the 45, but instead of passing it to Dunn, who then could have kicked it back out to Holiday for an open three, Zach sort of stopped the ball. And I caught myself sort of analyzing that play and thinking, well, that was really bad. I know he made that shot and that was nice and all and he got to the line, but that wasn't a great play because he sort of killed that ball movement. But to your point, you can sort of live with those occasional plays if he's giving you efficient offense and, you know, 85-90% of the time the shots he is taking are good and effective ones. And that's kind of the LaVine we've seen, whereas last season, that shot that he may have taken in the corner there, that would have been coupled with, maybe 4, 5, 6 other terrible shots along the flow of the game. But this time around, there's only been maybe 1, 2, maybe occasionally that third bad shot, or not bad, but questionable shot. But you can live with that when, you know, in 22 minutes as he's been playing in preseason thus far, he's giving you 18 points, hitting over 50% from the three, almost 44% from the three-point line, and his true shooting percentage is through the roof. So when you're getting that level of efficiency and that volume of points that quickly, and he's attacking the basket and trying to get into the lanes as frequently as he has, you can sort of live with those plays. So I caught myself in this instance thinking, on that one possession, it was a bad shot. But then when you sort of step away from it and think, okay, I can sort of deal with that one shot if he's giving me 90% of the time good basketball, it's okay. So I don't know. Whilst I've been very positive, Levine, I don't want to go on the, off the deep end because this is just five games. Of course, it's a small sample, but the what we've seen thus far, it's been super encouraging. He's getting to the line almost five times here in preseason in 22 minutes a game. So that just illustrates the different type of Levine that we've sort of seen over the first five games of preseason.
Yeah, and last season he had the volume, and you know he was taking on a lot of offensive responsibility. I think he averaged about 4.5 assists per 36 minutes, something like that. So, you know, he'll likely have something similar to the start of the season with Markkanen out. And, you know, while Chris Dunn has played well overall, I think the one thing about Chris Dunn so far of his preseason is that we really haven't seen him, you know, be the quarterback of this offense yet. And we really haven't seen like a lot in terms of shot creation or, you know, just pure point guard play. So, and I mentioned this on our past episode, you know, would that mean that Zach LaVine is going to, you know, be, you know, maybe we give Zach LaVine a little bit more point guard responsibility in the sense that, okay, let's run more pick and roll. Let's get him to create for others. And, you know, let's see if he can, you know, carry that mature shot selection over and, you know, just balance out the overall offense. And, you know, to me, if we're looking at him playing like this, I'm optimistic that he can continue to do that, where he maybe relook at Zach LaVine as the primary facilitator of this offense, because right now I feel like this offense goes through a lot of spells where the ball just freezes out and players just get caught looking and they don't know, you know, they don't know really what to do with it. I mean, we saw it a lot this game where it just causes a lot of silly turnovers and players are just standing and watching. So, you know, anytime we got Zach LaVine, you know, in those pick and roll actions and getting to the rim, usually good things happen, whether it was ball movement from it or whether it was LaVine finishing. But yeah, I'm excited to see what LaVine can do and whether or not he can carry this over into the regular season. You know, what he's done so far has matched what he's talked about in the off season. So that's exciting to see that LaVine really has put in the work, and that he really has been aware of the things that prevented him from playing so well last year when he returned from the ACL. And it's also possible that, you know, not having to rehab from this knee injury and having a full off season of regular training, that maybe that was extremely beneficial as well.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. It's probably an understated one, one we sort of take for granted, the fact that he actually had a preseason. Well, one, to build his body. He's talked about that he's in the fittest shape of his life, but more importantly, he had a preseason to sort of gel with his teammates, and I think that's pretty evident on the floor. And to illustrate our point about him being an efficient scorer, against the Hornets, he had 26 points in 21 minutes on 15 shots. You can definitely take that, even if there's a couple bad shots in there. You'll take that level of efficiency every single time. And then against the Indiana Pacers, playing against a good defensive squad, 22 points in 28 minutes on 14 shots. So that in itself is good shooting. Today against the Nuggets, only played the half. He didn't necessarily get out there in that second half. The Bulls elected to sort of rest him there and for whatever reason put in Ryan Arcidiacono in Zach's place there. But again, 12 points on 8 shots in 18 minutes, shooting 62.5% from the field, connected on his 1-3. So basically, from an efficiency standpoint, Zach LaVine has given me everything that I wanted. He wasn't efficient last season. The way he's scoring or trying to score the ball, he's giving me everything I want, so I can't complain there. So if he maintains this level of efficiency, I'll be very happy. And from there, I guess it'll be about building onto his playmaking ability, which you sort of touched on there, that the fact that Dunn necessarily hasn't been the quarterback of the offense just yet. We've seen a little bit more of Zach LaVine in pick and roll and those sorts of things. But in this Denver game, there were a lot of turnovers on the ball. So the Bulls really do need to clean that up. That's on Zach LaVine and Chris Dunn to do, given that they are the starting backcourt. So those two today against the Denver Nuggets combined for only 3 assists but 10 turnovers. So hopefully that's an aberration, but that's something they'll need to clean up. But I mean, that's something we can sort of hope to see maybe once we're into December, January, those sorts of things. I guess the first couple months for LaVine, he's hoping he can maintain this kind of efficiency and scoring prowess, which I'll definitely take. And it'll go a long way into proving that he's worth that contract. So I'm very bullish on Levine. But let's talk Chris Dunn. What have you made about him in preseason thus far? Because to me, he's sort of gone under the radar. Didn't necessarily have a great game against the Nuggets today. As I mentioned before, he and Levine combined for 10 turnovers, six of those being from Dunn. So what have you made from Dunn just generally, where he sort of fits into this rotation now that we've seen Zach LaVine really handling the ball and being that focal point? What have you made of Dunn?
Dunn looks good. He's I mentioned the playmaking thing. Really, that's my only issue with him so far. But overall, he looks good defensively. I mean, we know what he can do defensively. I mean, he's just a pest. And I think it was after the Zach LaVine three-point play where he forced a turnover in the backcourt on immediately following that. And he's just had a lot of really good defensive play so far in the preseason. I mean, at a position at point guard where there really aren't a lot of premium defenders, and while some argue that it's not an important position defensively, you know, having a player like Dunn who is just so versatile and pesky and has the strength and the size to, you know, defend stronger guards as well. And, you know, has the wingspan and is active, like having that is a luxury. So I love what I've seen from Dunn defensively. Offensively, you know, still a work in progress, but really hasn't been bad overall outside of the playmaking. One thing I will say, though, is that there have been times during preseason where I really want Dunn to just shoot the ball, where he'll get the ball off of ball movement, but instead of taking the wide open three, he'll kind of wait for the defender to come and then kind of pump fake and then decide to drive. And I really want him to get in the habit of just kind of naturally just shooting it. Like I know his jump shot is still in development, but I kind of want him to get to the point where, like Bobby Portis, where you're just getting the ball and shooting. There's no hesitation. It's all just a fluid movement. Because I remember when Bobby Portis was a rookie and, you know, I feel like he was hesitant sometimes to shoot. And I think part of that was that his jump shot movement was really kind of slow. Like there was at one point Bobby Portis kind of had a little bit of a hitch when he first came into the league. And, you know, he kind of like paused for a second at the top. I want to see Dunn just, you know, be confident to take those shots and, you know, deliver that. Because if a lot of the ball handling is going to be shared in the offense, there are going to be a lot of times when Chris Dunn is just getting open threes and he's just going to have to take them without hesitation. And, you know, that type of shot without hesitation is better than a shot where you're overthinking it. So overall, yeah, I've loved what I've seen from Chris Dunn.
Yeah, it's been a bit of a weird one for me with Dunn, because I think there's been a lot of positives. Like, you just look at his shooting percentages and you're like, wow, that's pretty much what I did not expect. He's been super efficient from the field. His true shooting percentage is really strong. His PER, his player efficiency rating, that's really good, even though he hasn't necessarily had huge volumes. But to that point, he hasn't necessarily shot the ball a lot, which is what you sort of alluded to there, that whilst his percentages are really nice, we haven't seen Dunn really actively looking for his own offense, which I guess is a good thing given that Zach LaVine is out there trying to get the ball some scores. They're trying to integrate Jabari Parker, even Wendell Carter Jr. So there's a lot of offense around him that he doesn't necessarily need to look for his own shot or hunt that out sort of thing. But I would have liked to have seen a little bit more from Dunn. But having said that, the shots he's taken, they have been pretty good. He's been efficient on it. But at the same time, he's had a few games here where his turnover rate has been really problematic. His assist to turnover ratio at the moment is basically 1-for-1, so you don't necessarily want to see that. But typical Chris Dunn, great defense, strong rebounding for a point guard. Obviously, the steals are there. The shooting has been there, even albeit on lower volume. But he still needs to clean up his point guard role, I guess, because I don't know about you, but watching that Denver Nuggets game today, there was a few moments where he was just loose with the ball and loose with his handle, which has been a problem Dunn has sort of had ever since he entered the league. But he's had a couple turnovers, not necessarily just because he was throwing a bad pass and it got intercepted, but just bad turnovers where he sort of lost handle of the ball and the defense just swooped on it and led to transition buckets. So what are you wanting to see from Dunn? What do you think is the main main area of weakness or spot of his game at the moment that you want to see him improve on, assuming his shooting percentages maybe not necessarily maintained, but aren't necessarily an issue. What other areas do you think Dunn needs to clean up straight away for this Bulls team to be effective?
I want to see more improvement finishing at the rim, because I feel like Dunn is good at getting to the rim. Like, he's got a good first step. He's very athletic, good explosion, and it just doesn't seem like he's really erratic when he gets at the rim. Like, he just doesn't. He just kind of throws it up. I feel like there's no really rhyme or reason. So if we're assuming that his shooting is decent at maybe respectable volume, I would like to see a few plays each game where we kind of see Dunn being able to finish at the rim well and getting to the line more, where he kind of uses that size and strength he has, whether to draw contact or just to further his advantage at the rim.
Yeah, I think you make a good point. And with his size, he should be able to get to the rim at will. And I think it's something he can do. But he really needs to close on his ability to finish at the rim. So whilst it's been a bit of a mixed bag for Dunn, I think there have been some positives there that I think we can take into the season. And probably more holistically, I think he and LaVine as a combination have looked okay as well. So when we were talking about the, in preseason, there was a lot of debates about the cohesion of sort of LaVine, Dunn, Parker, and obviously Lowry, but Lowry's out now. But we can at least tick off for the moment that LaVine and Dunn have kind of looked good together. And in theory, they obviously meshed well together. But I think we've sort of started to see that on the court as well, that their games sort of translate well together. And I think Dunn has been cognizant of the fact that he sort of needs to let LaVine take over a little bit at times in terms of that ball handling ability. So I want to see Dunn being a little bit more aggressive in getting to the rim, as you sort of alluded to there. But let's move on to Bobby Portis, who is a player that definitely doesn't need any influence in terms of getting his shot up or anything of that nature. He's more than happy to do that. But I want to get your take on Bobby Portis thus far, because whilst I've been super impressed with Zach LaVine, I think it's fair to say Bobby Portis has been right there with him in terms of the Bulls' best and most consistent player through preseason. So let's talk Bobby Portis. Let's talk about what you've seen from him in terms of his play. But then I also want to talk about his contract situation, which is definitely going to be something to monitor over the coming days. So what have you made from Portis and the way he sort of approached preseason? And do you think him as a starter is something that's viable for, maybe not for the Bulls, but for another team going forward?
Man, if Bobby Portis is like auditioning for other team, he's making a damn good case for it right now, because he's looking really, really good. And you can see the impact that he has, not only not only replacing Markkanen for the time being, but just what his energy brings to a team. Like we mentioned it earlier in the show, that when Bobby is on the floor, the team just seems to have an extra bounce. Like, players feed off of his energy. And Joakim Noah had like that similar effect. When he's on the floor, it's just contagious. Like, you see a guy playing that hard, you see a guy that's into it. And, granted, some of the chest bumps, like up 2-0, are funny. And it's just like, okay, man. But
yeah, calm down,
I think
Bobby.
He did that this game. Yeah. I think he scored on Millsap. Maybe it was like 4-2. And he just had like a loud prime. I'm just like, okay, man. But, that stuff is contagious. Like, that's what you need. And, considering the Bulls' lineup was so flat, like the first few games, and they were just getting behind early, like, Portis's role just seems to just be very contagious. And Sam Smith kind of alluded to something like that in his mailbag today. I don't know if you read it, but somebody asked a question about Bobby Portis, and he talked in detail about how Portis has been like a really positive locker room guy for the Bulls, and how players look up to him and they're feeding off of him, and how they really respected that he pretty much told Dwayne Wade to stick it a few seasons ago. So Bobby's just looked good. Like, offensively, I think the biggest thing that continues to always stick out about Portis for me is that his jump shot is just significantly better. Like, I mentioned it, he used to have like a really, really slow movement in his shot. It wasn't fluid at all. He kind of had a little bit of a hitch. But now when Portis gets the ball, there's no hesitation. He's getting the ball and he's shooting it. Like, he's taking the open shots, he's taking good shots, and he still has that strength down low to just body you and get to the rim and just, you know, finish in the post. Like, he was doing that to Paul Millsap, who, while Millsap is like 6'8", 6'9", Millsap's a strong dude. And Portis was just taking him down low like it was nothing. And that's just really good to see. And Portis is also a really underrated passer as well. Like, his assist numbers continue to get better each year. And I know the biggest criticism about Portis is that he's not a good defender, and I agree with that. But we've seen players talk about how he's been more vocal and, you know, he's trying to communicate and how that's been helping the defense. You know, Chris Dunn talked about that. So, you know, if Portis doesn't have the speed to really keep up with the faster players, his effort, it's there. Like, one thing I'll never question about Bobby Portis, like Joakim Noah, is the effort. These guys are going to give you, you know, all that they have every single game. And, you know, regardless of flaw. So I like that about Portis, that, you know, each game he's into it. Like, you don't have to give him a pep talk. He's going to be out there. So, yeah, I'm really, really optimistic about what we've seen from Bobby Portis. And again, if this is an audition for other teams, I think a lot of teams are kind of, you know, licking their chops right now to see what the Bulls, you know, end up doing with him.
Yeah, and look, you mentioned before that we didn't necessarily expect to be here with Jabari Parker 5 games in, talking about him being the most expensive reserve going around. But to be honest with you, I didn't expect to be here 5 games into the preseason crowing about Zach LaVine and Bobby Portis being this good. That wasn't definitely on brand for me. So this is weird for me to be talking so highly of these two guys. But Portis has, a lot like LaVine, just been scoring buckets at will, to the point where he's almost scoring as many points as minutes as he's been playing. So 17 points in 22 minutes through preseason. He probably had his worst game in preseason against the Nuggets today, scoring only 10 points and 7 rebounds. But for the 5 games, 17 points, 6 rebounds, 22 minutes. And he's done that without necessarily shooting well from three. So only 26% from the three-point line. So it's not like he's been going off from the three-point line and getting buckets from there. He's been doing work inside the post and inside the lanes and getting his buckets below the three-point line. So whilst we expect that three-point percentage to sort of go up because we've seen Bobby Portis be a decent three-point shooter, he hasn't relied on that. So he's becoming an offensive piece off the bench, obviously starting now, but he's proving that he can, at minimum, be a very good offensive player in the NBA. Someone that's going to give you that energy, and he's going to give you a lot of rebounds as well. But it's getting to an interesting point here with Portis, because he's extension eligible right now, but he's only extension eligible until October 15th, I believe. So that's pretty much coming up in the next couple of days. Well, I think when this show is released, that'll pretty much be October 15th. So by then, we may or may not know whether the Bulls and Portis have sort of reached an extension. But you and I had a bit of an exchange on Twitter, and it was because I was just sort of watching that Pacers game, and Bobby Portis was playing a really good game in that one. And I was just thinking, you know, what the hell should the Bulls do with Portis? Should they try to extend him now? Should they wait? Should they trade? There's a few ways this could realistically and justifiably go, but him being this good thus far, and we talked about him being that emotional and vocal leader on the floor, whilst you don't necessarily just pay a guy because he's a leader, I think it plays a part in as well and sort of adds value. But what do you think the Bulls should be doing here at the moment with Bobby Portis? And do you think it makes sense to be extending him right now if you can? We've just sort of seen the Miami Heat reach an extension with Justin Winslow, giving him a 3-year, $13 million deal. That may in itself be a bit of a proxy into what Bobby Portis may be asking or what he may be receiving. But what do you think the Bulls should be doing here with Portis as we move closer to his extension date?
This is becoming a really, really complicated situation, I think, with Bobby Portis. And I wrote earlier in the offseason that I thought that Bobby Portis, while good and, you know, clearly a valuable player in this league, that when you have Lauri Markkanen and now you have Wendell Carter Jr., that would you really want to invest a lot of money in a third big? But you're looking at, you know, as you mentioned, a player who has an impact on teammates with his being vocal, with his leadership, you know, with his emotions. Like, you know, just taking a player out of the locker room like that, who has that type of impact, like that's meaningful. And I think players would kind of, there'd be some sort of void there. So with Portis, it's really tough, because logically you're saying to yourself, okay, we would prefer to keep this money just in case we can, you know, convince some star player, I guess. I guess that's what, you know, most think, that okay, let's try and get a star player here, and we're not going to worry about, you know, a bench player. But I mean, those are kind of the pipe dreams, and Portis is kind of a player that is doing really well for the team and continues to improve season after season. So I don't know. I think $13 million for, like you mentioned, Justice Winslow, that's a lot of money over, let's say, I guess 4 years. That's what, $52 million. Maybe Portis could push 50, or maybe Portis could push $15 million. I'm not sure, but I mean, that's a lot of money for a reserve player. But at the same time, you know, you're getting a player who keeps putting in the work and is getting better each season. So I don't know. I feel like an extension isn't going to be reached by October 15th, and I feel like they are going to play it out till into restricted free agency. But I mean, it's really amazing, kind of like the turns we've gone through with this Portis thing, because I feel like maybe a few years ago that this would have been an easy call and fans would have been like, okay, let's let him walk. But now we're at the point where it's like, I don't know, it could really go either way. Like, it's to me, it seems 50-50, I guess. Like, what do you think?
Yeah, it's a good one. And you mentioned a few years, but I think it can only go back a few podcast episodes for when I was talking about it. And I was of the opinion at that point that the Bulls should absolutely not extend Bobby Portis, because to me, that was a logical thing. His cap hold is around $7.5-$8 million, somewhere in that vicinity. If you are going to extend him, you definitely don't want to extend him to an amount too much greater than that, because you're going to be costing yourself cap space in 2019, as you sort of mentioned. But now, I'm not necessarily moving away from that point, but maybe I'm second-guessing it a little bit, because Portis has been that good that if you don't necessarily sign him now to an extension, and you may be able to get him on maybe a more team-friendly extension now versus what you could in, say, 12 months' time, or maybe 9 months' time more accurately. If you wait and don't extend him now, say, let's just pretend we can get Bobby Portis to re-sign for 4 years, $50 million. So about $12.5 million per season, which is effectively what Nikola Mirotic was earning per season when he signed his new deal with the Bulls. So I think that's doable. I think that's could be argued from both sides, or at least from the Bulls sides, that it's a good number to have. But let's just assume the scenario where the Bulls don't necessarily do that. They don't extend him and are looking for that cap side of things for 2019. And they try to make a splash in free agency. They will probably miss. I doubt they're going to get a big free agent through the doors. But it probably is, you know, they need to do their due diligence and keep that max space open. But assuming they do that, and then another team comes around and tries to swoop in on Bobby Portis and maybe offers him 4 years, $15 million per year, maybe even higher, $17 million per year, sort of taking that contract towards a 4 year, $70 million deal, something of that nature. It's almost a damned if you do, damned if you don't sort of situation from the front office, because if they sign him now to what we perceive a team-friendly deal, there'll be question marks about it being, why would you sign him now when you've cost yourself maybe $5 million in cap space or additional cap space? But even if they don't sign him now or bring him to that extension, we could reach a situation in 9 months' time when we're saying, why didn't the Bulls front office extend him when he was at a cheaper value? If they have to go on ahead and match an offer that he sort of receives going forward from a team that may be in that or a vicinity of 4 years and $70 million. So it's kind of a hard one for the front office. And Bobby Portis is making it hard because his play has been that good. If he was struggling and wasn't necessarily performing, then, you know, the position of waiting and not necessarily extending him makes a lot more sense. But he's out here. We quoted his numbers before. He's doing really well. And I guess the situation's a bit convoluted as well, because we don't necessarily know what's going to happen with Jabari Parker and his $20 million next season. But if Jabari's off the books for $20 million, Ashik and Robin Lopez, big contracts are gone as well, then maybe you can sort of stomach bringing Bobby Portis back as the main big off the bench at $12, $13 million if someone like Lopez is gone and his $14 million contract's gone. If Jabari Parker and him being a power forward and his $20 million, if he's gone, then maybe it makes it, I guess, more justifiable to keep Bobby Portis around now at an extension amount and sort of just move away from that risk of losing him in free agency.
Yeah, and the other part about this is that there should be more teams with money in the offseason or next summer. Yeah. And, you know, this past season, you know, there were a lot of players that were frozen out. Like, I think Marcus Smart was frozen out for a little while. Even someone as good as Clint Capella, you know, it took a while to really get a deal from Houston. But next summer, someone like Bobby Portis, who will be, I think he'll be 24 years old and, you know, doesn't really have a ton of burn on him yet. Like, that's valuable. Like, a team will really look at him as like, okay, we can put this guy in our lineup. He's a prototypical stretch four. He can score inside as well. Like, you know, there's a lot of value to be had here. So I think you hit the nail on the head. This is a damn if you do, damn if you don't situation. You know, the Bulls could really be kicking themselves, you know, in the butt here either way. So it's really, really tough. And I'm not really sure what they should do. Like, it's tough because I don't know. Portis is playing really well. You want to keep this guy, but, you know, at the same time, you don't want, you know, your third big, you know, long term to be the reason why you don't land, you know, potentially an all-star player who may or may not want to come here.
Yeah, it's a tough situation. It's definitely one that's going to be a fluid one as well. Even through the regular season, obviously, if the Bulls don't sign Bobby Portis, then he does become a trade candidate. You know, instead of maybe not letting him walk, but losing him in free agency because you don't necessarily want to pay him $17 million, let's say. There's a situation out there where teams like the Brooklyn Nets, who will have the ability to sign maybe two max guys in free agency, they don't necessarily get one, but then they go after maybe some younger players coming off restricted free agency who they could potentially throw a contract at. We've seen them do that before in the past, and maybe Portis would be someone that'd be interesting in pairing a guy like Jared Allen with. So that could be a nice 4-5 combination for the Nets. So the Bulls have to have almost two eyes on this. They need to be thinking about it now, what makes financial sense for them now and into 2019 and beyond. But like we sort of talked about, there's a lot of things that could need to sort of happen here in this space. But it's a complicated one for the Bulls front office. I'll give them that. I think it's one where there's a situation here where, depending on things, how they play out, there's a situation here where we're sort of blaming them and the way they handle this going forward, irrespective of what they do. I think it's that tough. But I just hope it's not like a Jimmy Butler type situation where we could have had Butler at 4 years, $40 million or something of that nature, 4 years, $44 million. And maybe they've learned from that where they didn't extend Butler. And then, you know, not 12 months down the track, the Bulls had to sign him for a max deal. Now, obviously, Portis isn't going to command a max deal, but whilst you wait and you play that free agency game and you don't extend Portis, you could cost yourself more money in the sense of when you try to bring him back later on. So it's a complicated situation, one that we'll obviously monitor, and we'll learn in a couple of days where this thing is heading. But I wanted to close the show by talking about the rookies, and specifically Wendell Carter Jr. So I don't know about you, Edward, but I'm super high on this dude, and this is going to end up being probably the most positive Bulls HQ ever. But I just can't get enough of this guy. Every time I see him on the floor, I think he's the real deal. I mentioned it on the last show that I think there's potential here for him to be, maybe if he's not the best Chicago Bull, certainly the most complete Chicago Bull in the next couple of years. But I was sort of waiting to see whether Wendell Carter Jr. should be the starter of this team. And I was sort of giving that reservation to, at least initially, to Robin Lopez. I was thinking he should be starting in that center spot. But I'm completely on board now with Wendell Carter Jr. starting at center, given what we've seen from him, but also what we haven't seen from Robin Lopez. But let's close the show on your thoughts on what you've seen from Wendell Carter Jr. in this last week, particularly as a starter, and what you think that means for the team going forward as we head into the regular season, with the regular season sort of tipping off next week.
I love Wendell Carter Jr., so let me just preface that. Let me get that out of the way. I love Wendell Carter Jr. He is, to me, if we could have like a team almost of 15 Wendell Carter Jr.'s, like, that would be fine with me, because I just love the way that he plays the game. He's just smart. He's got the fundamentals down. He's got terrific instincts. Like, I don't think people realize like how rare it is for, like, Wendell Carter's what, 19 or maybe just turned 19. Like, I don't think people realize how rare it is for a center to come into the league with the defensive instincts that he has, the fundamentals that he has, the all-around skill that he has. Like, to me, that represents sneaky high upside. And I always said that about Wendell Carter Jr. Like, you'll watch a game, and, you know, this happened a lot of times at Duke. You'll watch a game. It doesn't really seem like Wendell Carter's done much, but you look up at the box score. Wendell Carter has like 17 points, 9 rebounds, like 4 assists. He's got a great defensive rating, and, you know, he's just making players better. He makes lineups better. And I think that's kind of where the Al Horford comparisons kind of came from, because, you know, Al Horford, you know, has this, you know, longstanding reputation for just being more than the stats. And, you know, he could have a game where he has like 8 points, 6 rebounds, and 3 assists, but you look up and he's leading, you know, the team in plus or minus. So Wendell Carter Jr., he's just fantastic. And I've loved what I've seen from him in preseason. Like you, I'm fully on board with starting him. Like, I think it makes complete sense now. And, you know, we talked all show about things that we didn't expect to be talking about so soon. I didn't expect to be talking about this right now. Like, I didn't expect to be talking about Wendell Carter Jr. as the opening night starter. And I think he's earned it. This team plays quicker. They play better with him on the floor. And, you know, I think he's mature enough as a prospect to give him that responsibility for. Like, he's ready for it. We need his defense. We need his passing, which is phenomenal. Very, very underrated passer. And while the shooting is still coming along, not a bad shooter, respectable, it's still coming along. You know, he just brings so much everywhere else that, I mean, it's hard not to be amazed by what he does. Like, I agree with you. I think 2-3, you know, 4 years down the line, we'll be looking at Wendell Carter Jr. as the most complete Chicago Bull, and I fully expect him to be, you know, one of the most complete centers in the NBA. Like, I fully expect a high level impact player. Like, I'm not really an MVP or anything like that, but, you know, we'll always look at him. We'll always look at the advanced stats, and we'll see that he consistently has a positive winning impact on games.
Definitely. And look, everything you mentioned there was key, but I think the most important thing you said, or the most important word you mentioned, was earn. And that was my biggest concern. I didn't want to necessarily just gift Wendell Carter Jr. the starting job whilst someone like Robin Lopez was still existing on the roster. But to your point, Wendell Carter Jr. has thoroughly earned that starting spot. And be that in his own play, but also Robin Lopez's poor play, Wendell Carter Jr. is currently the best center on this roster. He has earned the right to start come opening night, and I think he needs to. And that's, again, we opened the show talking about the lineup change that Fred made, but he made two changes. One was the Portis for Parker change, which was ballsy in itself, but then he's gone in and thrown his rookie center straight into it, and he hasn't looked back from there. So props to Hoiberg for doing that, but more importantly, props to Wendell Carter Jr. for earning that spot and really taking it away from Lopez. And I think he has to be the starting center come opening night, and he's earned that sort of thing. And I can't wait to see him next to Bobby Portis, but more importantly, I can't wait to see him with Larry Markkanen once he gets back. That's going to be super exciting. I didn't expect to see them getting too many minutes together at the start of the season, because I had just assumed Lopez would be starting next to Markkanen, but it's going to be happening sooner than later, and I'm really happy about that. And Wendell Carter Jr., just the little things he does on the floor, some of them that go unnoticed, even as a rookie, as a 19-year-old. We talked about it before, but it's just insane. So super high on this guy. I can't wait to see what he does. I hope hopefully he sort of just builds throughout the season, and I hope the same can be said for all the Bulls, particularly guys like Zach LaVine, Portis, and even Jabari Parker, who we talked extensively about before. But that pretty much wraps up the show as we wrap up preseason. So the preseason is done. I'm glad that it's over, and we sort of head towards the real stuff now, kicking off the regular season on the road against the Philadelphia 76ers on Thursday, October 18th. So what do you think about that one, Edward? How do you think that one will shape up? Do you think this Bulls team that isn't necessarily that great is going to... Well, how do you think they'll perform against the rising Sixers there on the road?
That's a hell of a way to start the season against Philadelphia, and the lineups that they play, they're so versatile. I mean, Ben Simmons, I mean, I'm not even really sure what to classify Ben Simmons as, because when he's just on the floor, like, he could really be any position, you know. Really,
he's just a freak. Just a freak.
Yeah. Like, if Joel Embiid isn't on the floor, Ben Simmons is point guard, he's either shooting, he's any position. And it's just crazy. But yeah, Philadelphia is really talented. They're one of the best teams in the Eastern Conference. They can play, they can beat you in so many different ways. They can beat you up tempo, they can beat you half court. Ben Simmons, Joel Embiid, Markelle Fultz has looked pretty solid in preseason. They have JJ Redick. Yeah, this is going to be a pretty good test. You're opening against a very quality opponent, and if your defense is looking like it has for us in the preseason, I mean, you might be a little worried there right now, because I mean, Philadelphia is not easy to guard. So I'm excited just because the regular season is here, and you know, Zach LaVine's played well, Portis has played well, Wendell Carter Jr. has earned the starting role. Like, I'm excited for these things, but then, you know, it's bittersweet because we're playing a really good team on the road where things could, you know, if we don't have a good start, they could get ugly and really quickly.
Yeah, and look, I'm not expecting a win here, and I'm not sure if there's going to be too much that we can necessarily take away from that Sixers game, but maybe there's a more winnable game on Saturday, game two of the season, the Bulls opener at home against the Detroit Pistons. Again, that'll be a nice game. I think an opportunity for an early season win before the Bulls hit the road on Monday, October 22, facing the Dallas Mavericks and that exciting young backcourt they have. So it's going to be an interesting couple games for the Bulls as they open their season. That first one against the Sixers, for me at least, is on a Friday afternoon or a lunchtime. So I might have to find a way to take an extended lunch there to get in game one of the season. But look, it's going to be an interesting week. I'm getting excited as the situation sort of builds towards that regular season. Obviously, there's going to be a lot of information to sort of digest before the first game even gets underway, which, of course, I'm alluding to the Bobby Porter stuff, along with how Jabari sort of handles this going forward, and if the new lineup that we've sort of seen sort of heads into the opener there. But I appreciate you jumping on here, man, and taking me through the last few games of preseason, talking about what we're seeing. It's been fun. But before you step away, I want you to let everyone know where they can follow you online, and more importantly, plug your podcast, because there's a new one. Having said that, even though it's new, you've been pumping out content, but let the people know where they can follow you online.
Yeah, please follow us at Bulls Gold. That's Bulls Gold on Twitter. Check out our website. We've launched it, still developing some stuff out there, but it's Chicago Bulls Gold. .com. Again, the ChicagoBullsGold.com. And yeah, check out the podcast, man. We've been having a great time doing it. Mark has been on for a few episodes. We've had Doug Tonis on there. We've had a lot of different guests on there. We've been having a blast on there. Shout out to Salim Sudarwala, who has been with me on this podcast for a while. And yeah, check it out. We release new episodes usually every Monday. With preseason, we've been like trying to do some like post games and pre games, so you know, we've been kind of, you know, been doing it like a little spontaneously. But yeah, check it out. It's just real fun. Like, it's just really fun to, you know, talk about Bulls stuff on these podcasts. And you know, yeah, I'm excited for it. So yeah, give us a look and let us know what you think.
Do me a favor, people, go follow Edward on Twitter, on his Twitter handle as well, at Edward Schuler Jr. on Twitter. But also follow the show. Do me that favor. It's a good Bulls podcast. As Edward been on there, I've been on there. Maybe avoid those episodes. They're probably the two worst. But every other one, definitely subscribe to his show. But Edward, thanks for coming on, man. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, man, anytime. I definitely want to come back on. And yeah, we got to get you back on as well. So yeah, so let me ask you one more question before we wrap up. I meant to ask you this when we were talking about Bobby Portis. So if the Bulls get off to a slow start, or maybe not slow start, but let's say they have a rough season by the trade deadline, do you think that they trade Bobby Portis? Like, is that something that becomes more plausible if you're just kind of completely out of it? You're thinking about a draft pick. Like, would you trade Bobby Portis?
I would be looking to trade Jabari Parker. So if I had to pick between the two, and they're both effectively in a similar situation where they both could potentially be free agents, and with Jabari Parker, obviously his contract's a little bit more inflated, maybe he could be a big, fat, expiring deal. I don't know if it's possible, but it's something to think about. But I don't know, can you get much back for Bobby Portis in a return at that point? He's a big man. Big men aren't necessarily in vogue. Obviously, he's still a modern big man as such, but a team, would they be willing to trade for him if they can sort of sign him in free agency, assuming they've got cap space? I don't know. I'm kind of positioning it in my head where the Bulls should maybe stick or keep Bobby Portis around and sort of part ways with Jabari Parker and have only one of those guys be the backup power forward moving forward. And I'd rather that be Bobby. And in my head, I have these grand illusions of luring Taj Gibson back to Chicago as that backup center once Robin Lopez is out of here. So I would kind of be completely on board with bringing Taj back, having him be that backup center, with Bobby being the backup power forward, with Wendell and Lauri Markkanen being our starters. That's my grand plan as we sit here today in October, obviously 9 months out from free agency, but that's sort of how I'm thinking.
I saw you mention that on Twitter, and I hadn't really thought about that. But yeah, Taj Gibson, like, I mean, I think this is last year of his contract with Minnesota. I mean, bringing him back as, like, a backup center next year, would actually be a good idea. Like, just another good veteran leader to have. You know, he's, you know, been through with the Bulls. Like, that'd be nice to have with the young players.
Yeah, and that was me just being selfish in a sense. Taj is one of my favorite Bulls of all time, so I just want to see him back. But it sort of makes sense generally as well, so... I don't know. To answer your question, I'm probably leaning away from trading Bobby Portis, which is something I didn't necessarily think I'd say, because I was probably more in the space of don't re-sign him, don't extend him, maybe look towards trading him. But when he's been playing this damn good, maybe he is a core piece. I don't know. We'll see, obviously, as the season progresses. But yeah, he's been very good to the point where he's making me second-guess myself, as Zach LaVine has been doing. So... interesting preseason, but we'll see how the regular season sort of shapes up once it gets going. But mate, look, we could probably end up talking for another 3 hours, to be honest with you. But I appreciate you jumping on.
It's been interesting. I mean, you're the number one Zach LaVine fan, the number one Bobby Portis fan. Like, I'm liking
what's
these developments
on
now.
What's going on? I'll soon be standing for Denzel Valentine, and that's when you know I've gone full 180. But we'll see about that one. Well, look, mate, again, I appreciate you jumping on, and like we said before, everyone go ahead and follow Edward online. Do me that favor.
Yes, please check out Bulls Gold. Again, every Monday we'll be doing it. So yeah, looking forward to it, man. Thank you.
Perfect, man. We'll talk again soon.
All right, awesome.
All right, folks, so that pretty much wraps up the show. We've gone a bit long here, but we had a lot to talk about given the amount of changes that have sort of gone on in the last week for the Bulls through preseason here. There's a lot of news to sort of talk about, and I'm tipping over the next week there's going to be a lot more news to discuss. So we'll be back again same time next week talking about Bobby Portis's extension, if it happened or not, seeing what the Bulls do with their starting lineup, but as well as actually talking about real regular season basketball games. I can't wait. So be on the lookout for the next episode, the first episode of the regular season, and follow me on Twitter at MK Hoops on Twitter, as well as the podcast at Bulls HQ on Twitter as well. So do that, and I'll catch you all again in a week's time. Thanks for joining me.